Okay, so one thing you said earlier on that is your sort of passion, if you were left to your own devices, it would be theology and religion and the intersection.
Yeah.
I have to give you time to sort of wax eloquent on some of your thoughts on that. I feel like this whole science and religion thing is even bigger in our society than it even was maybe 10 years ago when I was in school. It's just coming to a head, and I feel like it's getting even more divisive in some ways. Can you talk a little bit about just what you've been sort of researching and yeah, all that?
Well, I think, you know, science is a historically new. I mean, the epistemology behind reason and testing stuff out. I mean, science is, you know, it looks different in the second century BC, you know, as opposed to what it does now. But science as a relatively recent endeavor that incorporates, you know, the use of empiricism and replication and numerical assessment and theory development in the way that you would think about it in a science class, which is funny because the way that we teach it in like our high school science classes is not really the way scientists actually do things, because it so depends on whether you are, you know, trying to explain the origins of life, or you're trying to, you know, predict the weather, or you're trying to, you know, heal a patient of a particular tumor. So it science is, there's big S science and there's little S science. And so, you know, big S science, which is like as a worldview, is, you know, round, you know, sort of rooted in a very materialistic kind of rationalist way of thinking that the universe operates. And so you end up with, you know, all these problems about, you know, how the planets move, you know, that's sort of the Galileo kind of controversy. And then you move forward a couple hundred years, and now you get into Darwin and, you know, the origins of life. And then you move forward a couple hundred years now, and you'd say, okay, you know, now we're talking about the genetics of Adam and Eve, or we're talking about climate change, or we're talking about, you know, sort of pick whatever your favorite, you know, scientific issue of the day is, you know, vaccines and, you know, autism or something like that. And so for me, there's that philosophical level of, okay, how do Christians see the world and see God's action in the world, and not just explain away everything as bad as the result of the fall, but who see things through a very different filtered lens than the atheist, or the person who doesn't believe in God, or the Buddhist, or, you know, the follower of Islam. So thinking about, okay, how do these theological convictions influence the way you interpret your data, the way you see the telos, or the purpose, or the ends of a human being, are going to be very, very different. Because if, you know, and like, we'll use the pornography example. Okay, some people just say, look, dude, you're just an animal, and animals eat, they drink, and they mate, and that's what they do. And, you know, and they say, look, that's just the way that it is. And so I say, well, okay, so what you're saying is, and I try to, you know, say, so if it's found in nature, it's okay. And they'll say, yeah. It's like, well, I actually see lots of horrible things in nature, that, you know, sexually speaking, you know, animals, it's not just like humans are the only ones that will sexually force themselves on the partner. So you're okay with that. And then you can see, like, well, if you know, the ethics is an element that's sort of been stripped away in that kind of a worldview. So trying to say, well, okay, yeah, so animals have multiple partners, and actually monogamy is actually very uncommon. So you're okay if your spouse just goes out and just has random sex with people. Hashtag nature, bro, deal with it. You know, it's just like, okay, no, that's that. There's extra layers here. So for me, it's not just an extra layer. For me, the theological is the more stable foundation. So theology and ethics are not things that kind of get added on to things. They're actually all the way down in not just the DNA, but like the quarks of the way stuff is put together. And so for these sort of neuroscience and religion conversations, I kind of want to go down there, because that's a safer place actually to have a conversation, I think. Because when I get with people who are fighting with me about the way you interpret the MRIs of people who are, you know, looking at pornography, and should they have been diagnosed as a porn addict or porn compulsive or porn impulsive, and why is their EEG wave pattern different? It's like, okay, I'm happy having those conversations, but I think if you dig down deeper, what you find is there are philosophical and theological assumptions about what it means to be an embodied creature, what it means to be a sexual creature, that when they are more clearly unpacked, help you realize why you're seeing the data in the way that you are, and maybe even seeing colors that you can't see. Or I'm thinking of, like, you know, the black and blue dress, like people would see it as yellow and gold. And more recently now, maybe that's like so 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, right.
What is it?
Yanny and
Laurel and Yanny, yeah, right? Yeah. Like that's maybe that's a better way. It's like, why do you hear Yanny and I hear Laurel? But actually what we're doing is we're talking about this data set, or we're talking about human sexuality. So where you see empowerment, I see oppression. Or where you see, pleasure, I actually see a lack of consent. You know, so, how do we make sense of that without devolving into a kind of ethical relativism that says, well, because people can see things in different ways, none of them is right? I'd rather say, no, actually, there's a perfect way to see it, which in my framework is the way that God sees things, and we should be moving in a trajectory towards that way of thinking, not just because there are different ways, then none of them are valid, but more of a critical realist, which is that, no, I think we can be moving towards a better way of understanding sexuality. So when I see this little, yellow line depicting this particular group on their EEG P300 waves, I say, well, that's a result of this and not a result of that. And they say, well, I think it's that and not your this. It doesn't sort of just devolve into name calling after that, or who has more cultural power to, to bring in the other big guns of politics or money or social capital, but actually just to step back and say, well, no, I can disagree with you on that, but can you see my perspective? I'm willing to adopt your perspective and to see it. But when I look at these two, there are so many other layers to it. Because for the neuroscientist, I think it's less about origins of life, which was huge. It's more about what are the ends of these things? What is the goal of having a brain that can categorize the world? Well, it makes the world a lot more easy to handle, number one, but it also means that you, because of that categorization predisposition, now end up creating races and developing stereotypes. And here's where racism comes from. And that's why. So it's a capacity, but it can play out in lots of different ways. So how do you then change your categories while leaving some, like, I don't want to like look at someone and not see their skin color, because that's part of who they are. But I don't want it to be, and it might even be the first or the second or the third thing that I see. But how do we capture our thoughts and reevaluate our thoughts and move from seeing people as not human to seeing people as different bearers of the image of God? And for me, that's where most of the really fascinating, beautiful part of the neurosciences plays out.
Wow. I think I could talk about that pretty much all day.
So can I. I'm halfway through talking through the day on it, but
sorry about that.
I tend to ramble.
No, that was not rambly at all.
You can give me the ramble signal.
Not at all. I feel like what you call rambling, I'm just like affixed to. I feel like your rambling is very eloquent. So
thank you.
It's really fun to follow along with all that stuff, because there is something to the just the presuppositions that we all bring mm-hmm. into everything, right? Yeah. And religions, science is no different from that, how we, view studies or how they're interpreted yeah. by what we do.
Yeah. But I think, and for me, my experience has been when I talk to other scientists, so much of it is that they've adopted this way of seeing the world, which, if I'm honest, at the end of the day, is very pragmatic. For them, it works. It gets them through their day. It pays their bills. It, helps them minimize the amount of discomfort and distress that they've got psychologically, reducing the cognitive dissonance or whatever it is. And so they're no different from lazy Christians, actually. It's like Christians who kind of adapt one view of the gospel and they just hold on to that. And in part it's true, but it's not a rich, robust gospel. So I think by and large, we don't often have the time or the space because we don't have the luxury of the time or the space or the social arenas to have these kinds of honest questions, especially today when, you know, anytime you express any sort of position that, mostly politics, I think, where you seem to step out of line of whatever box that you've been told you have to stay in, people just lose their minds. And it's like, wait a minute, a Christian can't think that, you know, believe in climate change. Like, well, actually, well, let's hold on for a second. Like, why did you think that that was part of the box? You know, why is, you know, like, well, Christian can't believe this. And it's like, and actually, I think what we're seeing now is a lot of the, these conversations are revealing the fragility of these boxes that we've created. Thinking about, okay, you know, blue and red Christianity, whether that's politics, or thinking about, you know, a view of, and I think there's always going to be the political and the social stuff, I think, that will reveal those things. But I think we're beginning to see some of the fracture of that. But there are different times, you know, there's intellectual fracturing that occurs, and you know, you look back over the last couple hundred years and you can see where mental views of how the universe is organized will fray around the ends, and then they'll be they'll be reframed, and then presumably in a better version. And so I'm kind of hopeful that the conversations that I'm having about pornography or about the neuroscience in the brain, and you know, teaching my class on drugs and religious experiences, like, okay, everybody freaks out about, you know, the use of magic mushrooms, you know, especially Christians, like, oh no, you can't do this. Like, well, let's stop and think why people may have done that. And what does that reveal about the way that our brains are organized? You know, or ayahuasca in South America, or looking at the psilocybin from magic mushrooms, could that be used as part of a treatment procedure for people who are depressed? And I mentioned earlier ecstasy. I mean, ecstasy is now being used almost like an anesthetic, a psychological anesthetic for people who have post-traumatic stress disorder. So like, you know, when you go under, you know, get a knee operation, you know, they kind of knock you out and you wake up, you're like, oh, my knee's the size of a cantaloupe now, but they went inside presumably and I didn't feel any of that because I was unconscious. Well, what, you know, that's a little bit different from we're going to numb your tooth, right? So you're going to be conscious, but you're not going to feel us digging around there as we're doing the root canal, or the cavity or whatever it is. And so what would happen if we used ecstasy or methylene dioxymethamphetamine, MDMA, as a way to psychologically kind of numb some of the overactive fear circuits that let us help you process that trauma, so that you can actually process it in that sort of pharmacologically stabilized state to help you get through that assault, so that when that drug wears itself off, you're now able to make sense of it in a way that now coheres with your own religious tradition of, okay, God has, you know, if God can use antibiotics to heal me, why couldn't he use this drug, you know, in a proper context, you know, in a controlled context with a specific end to help me. So those are the conversations that I like having. And I think the drugs and the mental health one are really pragmatic ones. They're present ones. So they're sort of the climate control or not climate control, climate change conversations or origins conversations are big picture conversations that people are having in, you know, political arenas. They're very politicized, but you're dealing with meteorology and, you know, and the origins issues with Adam and Eve are in genetics for me, it's there's this pornography conversation. I'm like, okay, so what's going on in the brain with pornography? And then the other one that is kind of fits with my first love, my first passion is, okay, drugs and mental health and spirituality. What's going on there? So that's where I spend a lot of my free mental time when I'm trying to get asleep at night, staring up at the the ceiling, like, huh, I wonder if that drug, if worked this way, how would, you know, what part of the gospel informs this, and how does my Protestant tradition differ from Eastern Orthodox traditions in the way that they might be open to some things that I might not, or even Roman Catholics, like, why might they be okay with this? So that's the sort of mental gymnastics that I do at night when I can't go to sleep.
Wow, that's awesome. Those are,
it's terrifying too. rather than like, should I walk the dog in the morning or will it be wet, you know, those are, it's like, I think there's so many wonderful, interesting things in God's creation that when we really stop and look carefully at them, you know, we get off our iPads and our phones and all that fun stuff, and we really see other human beings, and we really see all the pain in the world, that's more than enough to keep us busy. But I think when we see those things, that oftentimes we run to the things that give us comfort, the things that help us, you know, I don't want to look at all these other things. I want to pretend like they're not there, whether it's the poverty or the pain or the trauma or the exploitation. We just sort of self-medicate with entertainment and we just avoid it. So for me, once you kind of see things, it's difficult to unsee them. And so, yeah, each person based on their training, based on their experiences, are going to find different saddling points. And for me, it's the unlikely human sexuality and porn saddling point, which I would not have chosen. There's the neuroscience and faith stuff, which I would have chosen. And then there's, you know, the stuff that I do most of the day, which is help the student not fail this class, you know, or, you know, help me, you know, have my daughter make sense of the conversations that she's having at junior high with her girlfriends so that she's growing in maturity in Christ, or, you know, help my son, you know, deal with whatever, you know, he's dealing with, or to, if I'm completely honest, you know, how do I minister to Donna, you know, when I come home from work, and not just when I'm at home work, but, you know, after the podcast, I'll probably call her up and say, oh yeah, Curry and I, you know, we kind of chatted, this is what we talked about. And then I'll process it with her, and she'll say, well, this, I said this, what do you think about that? And so part of that is just ministering to her as we become more bound in purpose with one another. So
just such good stuff. That's
I'm really not that interesting of a person.
I think at the end of the day. Everybody listening to this podcast would completely disagree with that.
So. Well, I tell them to come and watch my day, you know, come and watch me sort of meander around and try to not have a heart attack and, you know, try to get the fat off the midsection like everybody else. I would be undistinguishable. So it's not like I'm super impressive.